Hello, here's your KVNF regional newscast for Monday, January 8th. The Colorado Legislature will open its 71st session on Wednesday. Capitol Coverage interviewed lawmakers on the eve of opening day. In today's fourth and final interview, State House reporter Bensa Berkland talks with Governor John Hickenlooper, who will soon be making his final State of the State address. Hickenlooper is term limited, and talked about his priorities for his final legislative session as governor.
Governor, you're going into your final legislative session. Talk about your emotions leading into this final session and what are some of the big things you hope to accomplish?
I'm kind of excited in a sense that I understand how the system works better than I used to, and I see with more clarity some of the opportunities that are out there. And I think I understand the legislators and appreciate their jobs and, you know, the work they do a little better.
Last session, there was a big focus on transportation funding. Are we going to see that be a focal point again, as well as a lot of discussion about reforming PARA?
I think we'll see transportation and PARA. I hope we see some discussions on affordable housing. You know, when you have a state that's growing as rapidly as Colorado, you can't keep up on your affordable housing anywhere. And the local municipalities need some help. They've got to help. They've got to do a big chunk of it themselves. But I think transportation will be a big deal, you know, one way or the other.
How much can get done? As you know the system pretty well down here, in an election year, we have a governor's race to replace you. A lot's happening nationally. That adds another unexpected element to any session.
My goal is to try and find nonpartisan approaches to additional resources for transportation. You know, you always fear that no matter what you say, they're going to come back and say, well, why didn't you do this? Or if you say right, they're going to say left. If you say up, they're going to say down. But I think this year might be different if we're careful to make sure that revenue goes in the right place and the projects are really what the state and the voters care about.
You called a special legislative session that did not meet success. A lot of hard feelings on all sides from lawmakers I talked to afterwards, not necessarily to you, but just the whole process and how it ended up. Does that change things going into the session, and how about resolving that underlying problem?
You call a special session, and you really hope for the best, and sometimes things don't work out. It was an effort to correct a mistake that this building made, and I accept part of that blame along with the General Assembly. I do really hope, and we will do everything we can to find the solutions to correct that mistake in terms of these regional boards and their funding. And I don't think it should create bad blood unless people want to have bad blood.
You've had a lot of departures, your chief of staff, some of the cabinet positions. What's that going to be like, not having some of your trusted advisors leading into this final session?
I think it's a fact of life that people come to work in public service jobs and they take, generally at these high management levels, they take large pay cuts. Doug Friedenesch took a 90% pay cut to come work for the state for 3 years. He couldn't afford to keep doing that. Pat Myers is going to come in and be the new chief of staff. He's completely different. He doesn't have any political experiences. He doesn't have a bias on most of these issues one way or the other. But he's a really thoughtful, careful, thinks deeply about things, and I really look forward to working with him. So as much as I'm going to miss Doug, I'm looking forward to working with Pat Myers tremendously.
One thing we didn't anticipate coming into this session, some of the sexual harassment allegations and formal complaints, there's still more reporting to be done on that issue. How is that going to impact next session?
There's no point in avoiding it. There's a cloud over the building in a way, but I think it's resolvable. I mean, I think we're going to the General Assembly is going to come together and they're going to look at what is the right way to make sure that the women, that all people feel safe to speak out when they feel uncomfortable in their workplace. And especially here, I mean, we should be the paragon of places where anyone should be able to come to work and not feel in any way ill at ease or that they're receiving any bias against them in any way. And if they do feel that way, they should feel absolutely free to speak up and get a fair hearing. At the same time, we want to make sure that hearing involves both parties and you know, we've got to protect everyone's identity as much as humanly possible. It's tricky, right? I mean, I think the whole thing is going to be a very difficult and important to get right process, but that's what the General Assembly is good at, right? This is the kind of thing where they will put in the time and effort, and I have every belief that they'll get it right.
Do you think there should be more transparency?
It depends on whether transparency helps protect people that feel that they're the victims of sexual harassment or in some way. Sometimes that transparency makes people feel more vulnerable.
Thanks for talking to us.
It's always a pleasure. Good to talk to you.
I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
Full-time minimum wage workers will get an extra $1,800 a year in 2018. But in many parts of Colorado, it still isn't enough to make ends meet. Eric Gladys reports.
Colorado's lowest paid workers got a raise this week as the minimum wage increased by 90 cents to $10.20 an hour. But for workers in many parts of the state, that still isn't enough to be financially self-sufficient. Chris Stifler with the Colorado Fiscal Institute says when businesses don't pay a living wage, taxpayers end up on the hook for health insurance and other public assistance programs workers turn to when they can't make ends meet.
Even working 40 hours a week, they're still below the federal poverty level. And what that means is, essentially, these big businesses are moving the cost of benefits for their employees onto the taxpayers' dime.
Colorado's minimum wage is set to reach $12 an hour by 2020 after voters approved a ballot measure in 2016. Opponents warned the move would hurt small businesses in rural communities, and some workers could face layoffs, reduced hours, or fewer benefits. Stifler says it'll be a few months before the economic impact can be measured when data from last year's wage increase becomes available. A University of Denver study projected that increasing the minimum wage would boost consumer spending, add $400 million to the state's economy, and lead to more jobs, not fewer. Stifler points out that Colorado's unemployment rate is at an historic low, but it hasn't caused wages to rise as much as expected. He adds the percentage of low-wage earners, including home health care, cashiers, and service industry workers, has been growing since 2010.
We raised the minimum wage because it historically has not been adjusted for inflation for a long time. And we kind of just embraced the philosophy that when all workers have enough disposable income in their pockets to then reinvest in their local stores, local coffee shops, local restaurants, it's good for everybody.
He says for a family of four, full-time workers need to earn close to $13 an hour to rise above the poverty line. A recent Colorado Fiscal Institute report also found women, Hispanics, and African Americans are more likely to hold low-wage jobs than other demographic groups. This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Monday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks for listening.